time to talk about the Qantas dispute. If you have been held up in an airport or you've got a thought on the union action over the Qantas dispute, we're joined this morning by a guest, Geoffrey Thomas, who is the aviation editor for the West Australian. He's also the chief editor for Air Transport World, which is a United States trade journal, and he's also a contributor to Aviation Australia. Good morning, Geoffrey.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Good. Well, thanks. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
Let's get a bit of background on the Qantas dispute, because a lot of people probably it's been going on for so long, probably don't remember how it exactly started.
Well, look, it's probably the most complex dispute that we've ever had in this country, and certainly within aviation there's never been a dispute like this, and there are so many factors that that come together to bring Qantas to where they are today. Essentially, in a micro sense, that the three unions that are at loggerheads with Qantas are the TWU, which represents the baggage handlers, the caterers, and some ground staff. And we've got the long-haul pilots, who are not to be confused with the short-haul pilots, who struck in 1989 in the famous pilots dispute. And we've got the engineers. Now, broadly, each group wants a pay increase, as the other staff have received already, of about 3% per year. And in some cases, they want a little bit more as a percentage. Some of the unions also want a grading increase. For instance, the pilots, a pilot who's flying a 767, currently average salary is $260,000 a year. Well, he wants to be paid the same as an A330 captain, $298,000 a year before the 3% increase. So they want a grading increase as well. Most importantly, each group wants various job guarantees. And they take various forms. And essentially, they enshrine their jobs, a situation that very few of us enjoy today. And that enshrining of those jobs is really completely outside what the industry is now accepting globally. And it would make Qantas totally uncompetitive, both domestically and internationally.
If they get their claims, what would it mean for the other air carriers, and they're the staff that work for them, the pilots and the maintenance people that they employ?
Well, it's interesting, because Qantas employs about 35,000 people. The people who are currently at loggerheads represent about 6,000 of those, 7,000 of those. The rest of the staff who have already agreed to 3% pay increases, they would immediately turn around and say, look, we want more. So that would flow on there. As far as its competitors are concerned domestically, well, Virgin Australia, the major competitor, their staff have already agreed to pay increases which are less than Qantas in most cases, in virtually all cases. So Virgin Australia is now really a head-to-head competitor with Qantas. I mean, go back a couple of years, in its previous form as Virgin Blue, it was a low-cost carrier, therefore not in the same space. But now with a new management, ironically, John Borghetti, who used to run Qantas itself, the mainline airline, he's now running Virgin Australia and has revamped it with a business class, and it really is now a head-to-head competitor with Qantas. So Qantas would be a significant disadvantage compared to Virgin Australia.
And we did hear, over the years, we've heard quite a bit that Qantas are in a bit of trouble financially. Is something like this likely to push them over the edge?
Well, look, no, I don't think Qantas is a robust airline. It's one of the few airlines in the world that has an investment grade rating. So it's not near an Ansett situation or anything like that. However, if this dispute is not resolved the right way, in other words, in line with what is happening overseas and domestically with this competitor, Qantas would be in a very difficult position long term, and slowly but surely would continue to lose market share. And this would put it in peril in the long term. We're talking 7 or 8 years down the track. We're not talking about next week or anything like that, but they are certainly making money. They made an underlying profit before tax this last year of about $377 million, which is a very good result. But their long-haul division, according to Qantas, is losing money and lost about $200 million. So for the 12 months. So they've got some divisions that are making, that are doing very well, other ones that are not.
It's always been a bit of a surprise how Qantas aren't really one of the discount carriers, are they? Their prices are still quite a bit above the other airlines, the cheaper budget carriers. Is there pressure on the company Qantas to actually start looking at maybe putting down the price of their fares and cutting a few services that they already provide?
Well, that's an interesting observation. And in actual fact, part of the part of their strategy is Jetstar, which is their low-cost division, and that has gone right to the very bottom of the market, and that's one of the reasons why Virgin Blue has moved up the market, because Jetstar took their space. So they've got these two strategies. They've got the premium strategy with Qantas. They've got the Jetstar strategy, which now commands a significant part of the market, internationally and domestically. They now carry 8% of the traffic in and out of the country, which is quite significant. Qantas carries about 18%. But Qantas itself can't discount its fares any more than it is domestically. They are pretty competitive, but internationally, it's simply struggling because its pilots are very, very well paid. And here's one of the issues here, and this is where we get hung up. It's not a question of whether the pilots should be paid more or even paid less, or the engineers paid more or paid less. The real driver here is what the public is prepared to pay. And surveys out of the United States, which are global surveys, done by some of the biggest companies, and we're talking samples of 10 and 20,000 people here, only about 25-26% of people have safety as their first priority. The majority have price over 50%, and frequency over 50%. People surveyed said they are the most important factors. So that the issue for Qantas and for its unions is not a matter of what it wants to charge. It's a matter of what the public wants to pay. And if the public doesn't want to pay the price, then they can't justify the pilot salaries or the engineers what they want.
Do you think Qantas survives off a bit of brand loyalty because it is the national carrier, because it has that safety record, as you say, and we all know that Qantas has yet to have a fatality or a major plane accident. Does the company actually survive off Australian punters who are just basically putting their money behind the company because it's Australian?
Well, indeed, and you raised two points. First of all, we love Qantas, or we love to hate them, one of the two, but we do love them, and that came to the fore during the Aviation Partners Australia buyout a few years ago, where there was a lot of tremendous groundswell from the public that did not want that deal to go through, and thank heavens it didn't, otherwise Qantas would have gone bankrupt through the GFC. However, getting back to your point about loyalty and the safety record, it's a very interesting dynamic that's happened within the industry. And this is, again, one of the many changing dynamics in this industry. Back in 1988, when we all went and saw Dustin Hoffman play Raymond Babbitt in Rain Man, he said, Qantas never crashes, Qantas never crashes. Well, indeed, they don't when it comes to jet aircraft. They've never had a jet fatality. And at that time, in 1988-89, in that 12 months, there were 231 accidents and incidents, serious, around the world in aviation. Now, and so Qantas could charge a premium for its safety record because other airlines, famous airlines, were crashing. Today, fast forward, last year there was only about 130 incidents and accidents, and most of those are in third world countries. Air travel has tripled in that time since. So, there's been enormous improvement in air safety because of aircraft technology, cockpit technology, and the whole raft of reasons. But the problem is Qantas can't charge a premium anymore for that safety record, and people don't think about safety anymore. So you've had this really interesting dynamic that's changed. And sure, when you get that A380 incident last year out of Singapore, and the pilots did a remarkable job, and I know two of them really well, and they're lovely guys and so professional. That is a rarity. And people soon forget it, and they say, look, you know, I'll fly with anybody because I'll just pick the cheapest fare. And that's caused a lot of problems for Qantas.
I'll read you a couple of these texts, Geoffrey. We've got the Qantas staff going on strike so much had turned a lot of the public against them. Now it looks like the unions are bullying the company, says Flemo.
Yeah, indeed.
It's been an ugly spat, hasn't it? I mean,
it's been a very, very nasty spat. And look, I'm not sure where this toxic atmosphere at Qantas start. I really don't. And I've written many times that I think it's time out. And, you know, we need to have time out and go back to the drawing board with Qantas. And it's very important to note as well, thinking about where this started, management at Qantas has made some serious mistakes. There's no question about that. But those mistakes date back, some of them, 20 years. And, for instance, you know, Qantas was the last major international airline to put seatback videos into economy, things that we just absolutely love. And when they weren't doing it, many of us turned to airlines like Singapore Airlines or Emirates or other carriers who did put this entertainment into economy. So they lost some hearts and minds then. And also, I presented Qantas in the mid-1990s with a proposition that they should put premium economy into their aeroplanes, because we are the second tallest people in the world and we travel the longest distances. And I said to management at the time, look, you know, you've got two choices. You're either in economy and sardined in, or you have to pay $10,000 for a business class bed. You know, what about the middle ground? You know, we want to pay more. We want to pay more for more, but not, you know, $10,000 for a trip to London. But they said, no, we can't make the business case. Well, many other airlines have made the business case. And finally, Qantas has come on board in the last couple of years and now installing premium economy. And they now admit it's the best thing they ever did, and they should have done it years ago.
If they'd only listened to you.
Well, you know, I mean, these guys getting paid, you know, 100 times more than I am, and I think they should know these things. But
those first class business class seats, they look very comfortable, Geoffrey.
Oh, they are. I mean, I've travelled in them a few times,
I suppose you'd be getting upgraded because you're an aviation writer.
Well, no, our magazine and the magazine I actually work for in America, we actually pay our way, and that's part of our policy. So, you know, their policy is to, you know, on long flights you fly business class, which is great. We tend to pay for more than we actually get, so for free. So, and we do okay. But I, you know, and one of Qantas's great strengths and balancing all that is their frequent flyer program, and I'm a member of that frequent flyer program, like I'm sure many, many people are. And we link everything we do to the frequent flyer program, and I use my points to upgrade myself. So that's one of their great strengths.
I was just checking, Geoffrey.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm jealous.
I'll sign the form, yeah.
If you could tell them next time I'm travelling, if they could upgrade me, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I've got a text here from Max that says, I'm flying to the Cup next Tuesday. I think strike action should affect management, not the public directly. Keep the public on side would help their cause. Here's a comment. Let's take a couple of calls, shall we? Good morning.
Sure, absolutely. Love to.
Mick, good morning.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm just sort of calling on behalf of the shareholders. I'm a small shareholder in Qantas, and, you know, I sort of got into it when they floated the company. And I just think that they've sort of been overlooked in all this. We haven't had a dividend for the last 18 months. The company's made a profit, supposedly, in the last thing, and the executives or the management have paid themselves a bonus, or the chairman or whatever he is, that, you know, the CEO.
Alan Joyce, you're talking about.
Yeah, CEO's taking a bonus and all that. I just saying, and all of the employees are all getting in and saying, we want a pay rise. Well, I just think it's a little bit out of kilter, and they've sort of forgotten about the people who are putting their money up here to sort of keep everyone in work.
Geoffrey, have you heard many grumblings from Qantas shareholders?
Yes, look, I have indeed, and Mick raises an interesting point, which I'm glad he raised, and that's Alan Joyce's salary. Now, you know, Qantas has handled this exceedingly badly, in my view. The reality is that Alan Joyce actually had a pay decrease this last 12 months of 9%, and the bonus that he was due to get has been put off for 2 years, or put up till next year, till 2012, and he'll only get paid it if the share price goes up and meets certain targets. So that the pay rise of 71% that Alan was reported to have received, that is documented in the annual report as an accounting standard that they have to account for exactly what he'll be paid if he meets all these targets. But he hasn't actually got the money yet and won't get it unless the share price goes up, which of course will help the shareholders. But at the same time, the aviation industry has been going through some very, very tough times globally. And as Warren Buffett said, you know, I'll invest in anything but airlines. And the fuel price, which we've been paying for at the pumps, has been a major impost for airlines. Qantas has been doing it tough. And of course, this strategy of Alan Joyce's to right the company is all about trying to give shareholders a dividend.
Let's hope Mick gets one in the next couple of years. Let's have a chat to Bruce. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. With these unions, do they have secret ballot? If not, why not?
Yes, they do, and it's very well organised. They are secret. There was an overwhelming vote from the engineers and the long-haul pilots. I'm not sure what the baggage, the TW ratio was, but the other two were overwhelming for industrial action. And that industrial action must be documented through Fair Work Australia, and the airline must be given, I think it's 48 hours or 72 hours notice of exactly what the action, or exactly what action is going to be taken, and that action must be defined at the outset. It is very well controlled, and you can't get wildcat strikes. That's the bottom line.
I've got a text here from Genevieve. Thanks very much, Bruce, for your call. Please ask about the outsourcing of pilots and airport staff, which is what we, the public, are happy to be inconvenienced about, so that their jobs are not given away to overseas contractors.
Well, look, that's a very, very good text, and this is one of the most contentious issues of this. And there's two major elements. First of all, the baggage handlers. Well, you can't outsource baggage handling outside the country. Clearly, if you're unloading a bag in Australia, you're unloading a bag in Australia, and it's going to be done by somebody in Australia. So that sort of thing from the engineer, from the baggage handlers, is a bit of a nonsense. What they're talking about is the ratio of staff who are on different scales, and Qantas has a separate company that looks after baggage handling, as do most airlines now outsource all their baggage handling. Like, you know, if you're flying on various airlines within Australia apart from Qantas, you know, the baggage handling will be handled by a group like AeroCare or Menzies or Skystar. There are specialist ground handling companies now, and airlines right across the world have basically farmed it out to them. In the case of Qantas, they've got a number of the majority are still Qantas employees. A number are employed by another company, Qantas Ground Handling Services. And I understand in the case of the baggage handlers that the deal has been agreed to about the ratios and the pay, et cetera. However, it's all about how it's enshrined in, whether it's enshrined in the EBA or through Fair Work Australia. And that's the sticking point. But getting on to the engineers, all airlines around the world outsource their maintenance, and they have to. And one of the reasons is because maintenance of aeroplanes is an exceedingly expensive business, and it requires specialist equipment. Now, the international standard, maintain an aeroplane, like the A380, for instance, the international standard is you need 100 aeroplanes in your fleet. Now, no one's got 100 aeroplanes in their fleet, so you get specialists. who do this sort of maintenance. And, of course, that's the 100 is sort of a perfect number, of course. A lot of airlines have maintenance facilities for far fewer aeroplanes. But when you've got a small fleet, like Qantas has got at the moment, it means the cost of maintaining those planes is prohibitively expensive with all the equipment you've got to have. So in Qantas's case, they outsource it at the moment to Lufthansa in Germany. Now, Lufthansa is not a cheap provider of maintenance. There's no way. They're one of the most expensive in the world from a labour point of view, but because they have dedicated lines that look after components, then they can do it far, far, far more efficiently. And this is where this all comes in. And so Lufthansa, which is the biggest maintainer in the world and has over 3,000 aeroplanes under maintenance contracts, it has facilities all over the globe. And that's where a lot of the Qantas maintenance is done offshore. So from the engineer's point of view, from the engineering point of view, the majority of Qantas maintenance is still done onshore. But going forward, Qantas needs to have the flexibility of doing possibly a little bit more of it offshore, simply because they've got the wrong mix of aeroplanes and the wrong numbers of aeroplanes.
And we hear a bit of we hear the rumours that this may affect the safety standards and stuff, or the worries that have been put forward by one of the sides that this may affect.
Indeed, Michael, and that is always a concern. And the engineers, for instance, raise a concern on Qantas engines on some of their 747s at the moment, and they make the point that if Qantas had not closed down its engine shop a couple of years ago in Sydney that looked after that particular engine and sent it to Hong Kong to a Rolls-Royce facility, then they would be able to put through a modification those engines need a lot faster. Now, that's an interesting point. However, Qantas made that decision based on the fact that they thought all their 747s would be gone by now, replaced by more A380s and the new Boeing 787. The problem for Qantas, and this is a major, major problem for Qantas, is they ordered 50 787s and took options on another 50, so they have a commitment for 100. They haven't got one yet, and they're supposed to be delivered at one a month from August 2008. So they should have about 40 of them by now, and all their 747s would have gone. So Qantas made that decision based on the dynamics that were facing them in 2007, and said, "Look, we don't need this shop anymore. These planes will be gone." So a lot of the engineering problems that Qantas has got right now are directly related to the late deliveries of new equipment.
Has that affected other airlines?
It has. It's been the 787, and we're not here to discuss the 787, but I could talk all night about that. But it's been the biggest fiasco in aviation history. It's been an enormous problem for Boeing. It's an extraordinary aeroplane that brings a raft of advances in technology and passenger comfort, etc. It's new materials, new production system, new systems. It's a quantum leap in aviation. It really is truly the first 21st century aeroplane, if you like, and it'll set the standard for decades.
All right. Well, yes, that is a different story. So
it is indeed. So Qantas has banked very heavily on that, and so have many, many airlines, and they've sold over 800 of them, which is unprecedented at this stage of its life. So it's causing problems for airlines right across the world.
We'll just get back to Alan Joyce's salary again,
because
I've got a call about that, and I've also got a text here. I'm wondering how the income of the CEO of Qantas is actually justified to the $2 or so million he gets per year, and increases yearly when the regular staff have to struggle to gain any increase. That comes from Milko Bob. Jenny also wanted to talk about the CEO's wage. Good morning, Jenny.
Yes, good morning. Look, I appreciate all your insights that you're giving us into Qantas, but Alan Joyce's base salary is obscene to start with in relation to the other employees. When you get the CEO being paid so much more than the employees in terms of a ratio, and then having a bonus of 70%.
Which he won't be getting, we've heard from Jeffrey.
Yes, but even to consider that, even to put that on the table, is totally obscene, and it turns the public against Alan Joyce and against the management of Qantas. It's time that these people in management and in it's not just Qantas. It's a lot of companies. I'm a shareholder. I'm a Qantas frequent flyer long term, and a shareholder in many companies. And the differential between what CEOs and management are paying themselves and what the ordinary workers are getting is becoming totally obscene. Nobody needs bonuses when they're getting a base salary of millions of dollars.
Thank you, Jenny. Look, Jeffrey, is he getting paid too much?
Well, it's a very interesting point, Jenny, that Jenny raises, because this is all about those demonstrations that are sweeping the world and started in Wall Street about corporate greed. And, the $3 million he paid, yes, it is a lot of money. Interestingly enough, it's at the low end of the CEOs of the top 50 ASX companies in Australia. The top 50 ASX companies of a similar size in revenue. So in actual fact, from a corporate point of view, he's actually at the lower end of the scale. There's no question about that. But at the same time, I absolutely take the point, and a lot of people are voicing deep concerns about salaries. The issue is, of course, this has all started out of the United States, where, people are paid a truly obscene amount of money. Yep. I mean, we're talking not three, but we're talking $30 million for CEOs and more. The issue is Qantas says, well, look, and other airlines say, and other organisations say, we have to get the best possible people to do this job, to do these various jobs. And this is the rate we have to pay, otherwise we simply can't get them. So, because a lot of these CEOs of different companies say, well, I'm not passionate about aviation or cars or whatever it happens to be. I just want the best package, and that's where they go. So,
you mentioned before about the 787 fiasco. Surely that's a management responsibility, or surely the buck stops at management. Well, and did the CEO who made those calls, has he been held accountable?
Well, it's interesting. Jeff Dixon made that call, and there's two comments here. Jeff Dixon, Alan Joyce's predecessor, made that call. It was absolutely the right decision. And the problem for Qantas is this delay in this aeroplane has been what we call a rolling delay. Boeing said, look, it'll be another 6 months. Then it's another 6 months, another 6 months. And when you're getting these rolling delays of 6 months every time, there's been eight of them. You can't make an investment decision. You can't say, listen, hang on, let's scrap that and let's buy something else. The issue is, of course, in this case, there is nothing else to buy, essentially, because it is the best aeroplane by a country mile. And that's why so many airlines, most airlines are stuck with the program and whatnot. But going back further, and including Dixon's era, one of the things that Qantas didn't do was buy the Boeing 777. Which is one of the most successful aeroplanes Boeing's ever built, and that is the true replacement for its 747s. It didn't do it in the 1990s and didn't do it early in the last decade when it could have, and it would be infinitely better off if it had done that, and that was another misstep by management.
All right, I'll just read you this text here. You haven't mentioned specifically what the latest issue is, only the background. What are today's strikes about, and will my 10:30 to New York be affected?
Well, the latest dispute that we heard of late last night, early this morning, or today, is the TWU. They have a stop work of 1 hour on Friday, and the issue there is as I said, alluded to earlier, a deal has been done or basically agreed to. However, my understanding is that the implementation legally of it is the sticking point. There's quite a lot of rhetoric going on. In fact, there's a lot of rhetoric going on. But the bottom line is that it's simply the implementation. Qantas wants to do it one way legally, and the TWU want it done another way, and they can't agree. Mm-hmm. So we're down to the wire, but it's just a confounded nuisance.
Colin in Wanneroo says, bring back world-class airline, bring Ansett back. I've got another text here that says, I choose Qantas for safety and loyalty.
Well, of course, a lot of people do choose Qantas for safety and loyalty, and a lot of people are passionate Qantas flyers. The problem is there's not enough.
Josephine is a passionate dedicated Qantas flyer. Good morning, Josephine.
Good morning. Good morning, Michael. Good morning, guest speaker. I don't know your
name. Jeffrey is his name.
Jeffrey. Hi, Josephine. How are you?
Hi, good, thanks. Look, I am a frequent flyer. all my family has been. But in recent years, we're sort of on basic sort of teacher salaries or sort of retired teacher salaries, and we sort of have been forced to sort of go cheap, and we've made a choice, and we go Jetstar. However, it means getting up really, really early in the morning, losing a whole night's sleep because of anxiety, blah, blah, blah. And, look, the service on these cheap flights is practically nil, I have to say, which is a shame because you even have to pay for water just about.
So basically you travelled all your life on Qantas, but things have changed.
Yeah, recently. They have changed, yeah. Okay. I mean, in the early years, in the 70s, I'd fly back to Italy, which is my home place, and, you'd get the three or four meals or something, and you'd get cutlery and, nowadays, okay, security, you have plastic, which, we won't go there. Look,
yeah, I'm a bit with you, Josephine. I used to enjoy having my meal on the plane. We don't seem to get those anymore on the budget carriers, Geoffrey.
Well, yes, indeed, and there's a lot of us, and I'm 194 centimetres tall, or 6 foot four, and I don't like to fly across carriers either, because I don't fit. But yes, look, a lot of people are really reeling at the dehumanisation of travel by some of these low-cost operators who are just simply stripping everything out and cramming people into aeroplanes, and that's one of the issues we talk to Qantas about with premium economy, give us some humanity. Mm. But
can you do anything about the airport parking, Geoffrey?
Well, because that's another issue, because the government, in its wisdom or lack of, decided to privatise all Australia's airports, and that has been a major bone of contention for the airlines. And of course, the ACCC has had a look at them, and we've now got a Productivity Commission inquiry into the airports and their behaviour. So there's some interesting dynamics going on there with the airport parking.
We're just coming up to about a minute off the next news. Geoffrey, I'll just get you to answer this one quickly. It says, is the laying off of all the apprentices around 1990 contributing to today's problem?
No, it's not. That was to do with a significant downturn in the industry. Look, the problem with the engineers, as far as the engineering is concerned, Qantas is looking at two new aeroplanes, 787, which in fact requires half the maintenance of a 767 the aeroplane is going to replace in the 747. And it's a little bit like your motor car. How often does your motor car break down these days?
Geoffrey, we've got to go. The news is coming up. Look, thanks very much for joining us on the program this morning.
Real pleasure.
Thanks.
Take care.
Geoffrey Thomas there, who's the Senior Editor of Air Transport World. He's also the aviation writer for the West Australian. Thanks to all your calls. I'm sorry we didn't get to all of them. It's news time.